lot of credit card debt that is hurting the Americans' pocketbook.
I would look at volatility that's provided during election years as an opportunity to dollar cost average.
We're hearing that this AI boom is pretty much becoming the next big thing.
It's been a great start to the year for 2024.
Today is Wednesday, June 13th, and this is The Bash. Welcome to The Bash, where we bring the analyst and planner to the table to discuss relevant financial and investment topics. We're going to have 60 seconds to discuss each topic. Scott, my man, the analyst, is starting to heat up outside like the market, and that tells me summer's coming. Do you have any big plans with the family over the next few months?
Love the summer, spending time with the family at the beach, taking in some baseball games, barbecues, and the markets, right?
I heard baseball. That's what I'm focused on as well, Scott. So we're on the same page, which is great to start this show. And let's roll right into the markets as well. Scott, the market, it's up about 12.81% year to date as of June 7th. It's been able to fight off interest rates, global conflicts, and uncertainty of this election year. What are your thoughts on its resiliency so far?
That's the word. Markets have been very resilient.
What? He's tough, he's resilient.
And climbing that wall of worry. I would attribute the market gains in the first half of 2024 to three specific reasons. Number one is inflation. While the Fed's concerted effort over the last couple of years brought inflation down dramatically, it still remains elevated and above their long-term targets. However, prices have come down and economic data is pointing to a more favorable environment with lower inflationary expectations in the future. Number two would be interest rates. To begin the year, we were pricing in up to 6 rate cuts in 2024. Matt, we're in June. We're almost halfway done the year. We haven't had one. Fed expectations of rate cuts have come down dramatically, and the market has been resilient because inflation has also come down. Lastly, probably most importantly, are earnings. S&P 500 earnings have come in above expectations. 98% of the companies have now reported Q1 earnings. We've seen 82% beat the estimates by an average of 7%. That's what I'm attributing the first half positive news to.
On our way to a positive Yelp review.
Scott, great points, and obviously not disagreeing with any of them. I just want to focus on one item, the theme of artificial intelligence. We've talked about AI in the past, and the story just keeps growing. The tech sector right now is up with AI-related momentum, leading several tech stocks that are outpacing the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ so far in 2024. There's major demand right now for chips to create AI systems.
We only got chips. You like chips?
The spending and transformation is still strong. Let's think about the Magnificent Seven, the biggest stocks right now in the market we've talked about in the past. They are pretty much all going in on artificial intelligence. Recently, Apple revealed new artificial intelligence system. Google has their own chat program, Gemini, and NVIDIA, I think it's the last few quarters or more, breaking records with chip sales. And when you think of this, we've had the Industrial Revolution. We're hearing that this AI boom is pretty much becoming the next big thing.
Anyway, this Kyle Troy person is the next big thing.
And I always attribute to the market is about the future. It's about companies, which is made up of people, and people are always looking to innovate. And right now, innovation is outpacing all the risks to the market right now.
Couldn't agree more. AI is definitely driving the markets, is also driving conversations. But what I want to do is I want to switch gears to maybe a little bit of a less exciting topic.
That's boring. You're boring, everybody. Quit boring everyone.
A topic, though, we're asked about very frequently. When we work with retirees, Matt, how do we recommend when they take Social Security?
Scott, loaded question. Loaded because we get it all the time and there are so many variables. So all things equal, I just want to focus on when someone may pass away. And that is something that we cannot predict. So we look at life expectancy. A male right now is living till about 73.2 years old. A female is living to about 79.1. But then we're working with a client in their customized situation. We have to look at their family history. We also want to look at their current health to kind of project when they may pass away. And then that leads us to looking at their break-even point. Where will they get the best benefit from Social Security? If they wait longer, what age? It could be in their mid-80s. Could be 85 years old, where if they wait till age 70 and they live past 85, they'll end up making more by waiting longer. So we have resources. We have a group that we work closely with where we put these projections together for our clients based on their projected age they may pass away to help them maximize the most they can get from Social Security. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Matt, I just want to go through a couple data points, some important facts on Social Security. Let's start with what happens if you take benefits before your full retirement age. Well, if you take benefits prior to full retirement and you're earning income of more than $22,320 in 2024, those benefits are going to be reduced.
That's not going to be good for business. That's not going to be good for anybody.
What is full retirement age? If you were born in 1960 or later, it's age 67. If you were born before 1960, it's going to be anywhere between 66 and up to 66 and 10 months. But here's the fun fact that everyone should really understand. If you're deciding to take benefits early, you're foregoing the ability to earn interest. Your benefit could increase by 8% every year all the way up to age 70 years old. So when you're deciding to take benefits early, you should also be doing so with the mindset of, what am I giving up? Because if you delay benefits, that benefit will increase compound at 8% per year.
Scott, numbers, as usual, crushing it there. Great explanation. And I'm going to turn to another topic because I don't think you've even heard this. But Scott, this is an election year. What are your thoughts? I mean, are we not getting questions about this all the time in our meetings? How are you answering those questions?
They're already starting. We're in June. Markets don't price in the election for a number of months from now. And I often remind clients all the time that who wins the election and who's in the White House is really very little bearing on their wealth and on their wealth creation. As a matter of fact, going back to FDR, we've now had 15 presidencies. We've had 8 Democrats, 7 Republicans. Had you invested $1,000 in 1933, it's worth $19 million today. And as of this morning of the taping of the show, the markets are at an all-time high. So what I often like to focus on is, what sectors should I be looking at or avoiding? And the one I would point out that's often in the crosshairs is healthcare. Healthcare is in the crosshairs because drug prices is one of those hot presidential topics. But for long-term investors, I would look at volatility that's provided during election years as an opportunity to dollar cost average into your long-term investment plan.
Scott, thank you. And you mentioned a lot of numbers, so I want to try to, of course, sound like you and back that up. We always hear this year is different. This is a very polarizing election, but let's look at more data on the history of elections. There have been 24 elections since the S&P 500 index began. In these election years, 20 of those 24 years provided positive performance. That's 83% of the time. Think about now, we have a Democrat in office. If the Democrat is elected again, the total return has averaged 15%. What about if there's a Democrat in office and a Republican ends up being elected? The total return for these times was 12.9%. So backing up what you've said, Scott, the market is an all-time high right now. It has been up for the year. And usually the market, as we said on all the other items we've discussed, is focused on companies growing and improving and not always being greatly affected by who is the president.
At least I am the president of the network tonight.
Matt, love the topic, but again, let's switch gears. And I want to go to something that you know I love, which is the charts. So I want to go to the economic charts. I want you to first bring up yours and talk to our viewers about what are we looking at here.
Yeah, Scott, we're going to go to a chart here. And one of the things that's made the market resilient has been the U.S. consumer. And being able to stay strong as we can say the Feds raise rates and try to make it tougher on the economy. And what I have found glaring when looking at charts recently was focusing on credit card debt. And when you look at this chart, you can see in 2021, credit card debt was around $750 billion. And now you fast forward to today, and we are at $1 trillion or more dollars in credit card debt.
Holy moly.
That's over a 33% increase. And how long can the U.S. consumer help be a big part of why the economy is able to hold up and keep the stock market high? We don't know, but this is something I think is something to consider. It's alarming, and that is a lot of credit card debt that is hurting the Americans' pocketbook and could affect spending going forward. Scott, what about you?
Couldn't agree more. Tremendous amount of consumer debt, and I believe a lot of that is attributable to the wealth effect that I alluded to earlier. As assets have gone up in value, whether we're talking about real estate, stocks, in private equity investments, what a lot of investors have felt is that euphoria. That optimism that they can then spend more money and they've taken on more debt. But another part of the wealth effect that I also want to point out, I believe that the Fed actually needs to begin considering reducing rates in order to get cash off the sidelines. We are having investors create wealth with no risk by investing in cash, earning higher yields. In order to incentivize those investors to remove part of the $6 trillion that's currently in money market funds into risky assets like the markets, then the Fed needs to take away that punch bowl. It's not just to stimulate the economy, it's actually to stimulate the investor to invest.
Scott, great points. I mean, you brought the heat today. As you said, it's getting hot outside. Anything else you want to talk to investors about during this crazy election year?
It's been a great start to the year for 2024, a great first half, coming off of a phenomenal 2023 year. It would be obvious to recommend clients to dollar cost average.
I'm down with the DCA, and that is dollar cost averaging.
When they see future volatility come back into these markets, let's not just have this recency bias of the recent past is going to repeat itself. Let's go into this now election period of time and then 2025 with really our blinders off looking at everything that's out there.
Sounds good to me, Scott. And to all of our investors out there, don't forget, stay focused, stay disciplined, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Bash.
Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor. Member FINRA, SIPC. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee for future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. The economic forecasts set forth in this material may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. This information is not intended to be a substitute for specific individualized tax or legal advice. We suggest that you discuss your specific situation with a qualified tax or legal advisor.